Can begin. All right.
Can we make a quick announcement?
Sure.
Yeah. First of all, if people don't know, we do have coffee and perhaps donuts or strudel, whatever, in the lounge afterwards, so everyone's invited after the talk. There's also a second talk today at 3:30, I believe it'll be by Florian, in the same room, and that's on knots and knotting moves. And we were also thinking about since we'll gradually have more and more people here, mostly in topology, over the summer, running some other talks that would be given by more or less the local people, which could be myself or Igor or some other people, anyone who wants to give one, really. And we, if anyone's interested, any suggestions, you know, for time, we were thinking maybe on Monday afternoon, if that's okay with people. But if anyone has suggestions for time.
Monday is holiday.
This Monday is a holiday.
University
is closed, so thanks. So maybe we should start perhaps Tuesday. Okay, we'll announce something for
No.
But
Tuesday's
not a talk.
Yeah. Oh, Peter Lancaster has a talk going on Monday,
right.
Too. Would Tuesday be okay to start?
No.
No, we're not going to be here.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so
maybe
we'll start on Wednesday. I think no, Florian's next
one. All right. Let's discuss it during the call.
Oh, yes, exactly. Sorry.
It's too complicated the problem.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see when we can arrange it.
Let's consider simpler problems.
Yeah. It should be possible to find the time. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so this is going to be the fifth talk, I believe. So, the aim of this talk today, this lecture, is to define a combinatorial invariant of spin sisters from three main points. So that's my aim in numerical invariant of spin C structures. So, we already have certain technique by now. We know that first of all, spin C structures on three manifolds. It's a special case of Euler structures, which are defined in any dimension, actually for CW complexes of any dimension. Now we know that we have torsions, so I recall that we have torsions, which are defined in the following schematic. You have a CW complex, X, you have a field, F, you have a ring homomorphism from the group ring of H1 of X to this field. This should be a ring homomorphism. Now you fix it, you take any Euler structure and then you can define a torsion tau phi of X with dependence of this Euler structure, and which is an element of F, which is an element of this. So for those who didn't attend my last lecture, I just say that this is the torsion of a certain based chain complex. If it is acyclic, it is just a torsion. If it is not acyclic, it is zero. In this way, it is defined independently or without the acyclicity assumption. All right. Now, how to get a number out of this, right? Actually, we want to arrive to a situation where we have real tangible numerical invariance of such structures. Well, the first step is to consider The first step actually is to consider a kind of maximal torsion, which one can imagine to come out of this technique. So the maximal torsion, of course, would be ideally, as the field F, we would take the field of fractions of the group ring of H1X. So let me denote the group H1X by H. This is with integer coefficients. The usual homology with integer coefficients. So why not to take a kind of field of fractions for this thing? Then, and this phi, we just take the inclusion. This is going to be the inclusion of the group ring in this field of fractions. So this is, in a sense, the best possible way to deal with this choice of F and phi. But the only problem is that this ring has zero divisors in general. So this is possible, by the way, this is possible if the group has no torsion. Let me consider this case. Suppose that the torsion of H is trivial, which means that H is a free abelian group. H is a free abelian group. Now let's take some generators, say with generators T1 and so on Tn. So these are generators. Now the group ring is going to be the ring of Laurent polynomials in these variables. Well, Laurent polynomials are just usual polynomials, except that you can have negative powers of some variables. Well, and this is that's a very nice ring, right? It has no zero divisors. You can take its field of fractions. So Q of ZH is its field of fraction, which is just the field of rational functions in n variables. This is a field. And you can play this game, right, under this assumption. Now, what happens with arbitrary groups, arbitrary free abelian groups? The ring, in general, if the torsion is non-trivial, this group has zero divisors. Still, one can say something about it. It's not such a bad ring. First of all, I would like to embed it into Q of H instead of integer coefficients. Now I take rational coefficients, so I extend this ring, and I claim that this Q of H is a direct sum of a certain number of domains Ki, where each Ki, it's of course a commutative associative ring, a commutative associative ring without zero divisors. So that's I'm going to explain why it's but just assuming this for a second, then we can embed this thing in the direct sum of the field of fractions. Now each Ki has a field of fractions, so there is an embedding like that. So finally what we get, we obtain an embedding of our ring in a direct sum of fields. Instead of one field, we have just a certain number of fields, but well, that's not so bad. Now two questions. First of all, why is this true? Why such a splitting exists? And secondly, can one give an invariant characterization of this field? In fact, this field is what is called classical ring of fractions. So there is a certain ring which is denoted by like that, by Q of that H. This is so-called classical rig of fractions. Which is obtained by inverting all non-zero devices. So there are certain non-zero devices, we can invert them. This gives a certain bigger ring, which is called classical ring of fractions. So it is obtained from the group ring by inverting all non-zero devices. Well, and in fact, this is the same thing. So actually, what is true is that the classical ring of quotients or fractions of this ring is a direct sum of fields. Now, why? As a proof goes by this, in this. Now, I just want to explain this equality. We should observe that the group ring of the group H may be interpreted as for abelian groups you can split. You can split any abelian group with a direct product of its torsion part and free abelian group. Well, that's a trivial fact. So this group ring, in fact, may be viewed as a group ring of G of this free abelian group with coefficients in this ring. So that's a small trick. So using this splitting, you can write down such a formula. Now, the torsion of H, it's a finite abelian group. And the group ring of a finite abelian group, it's always a direct of its rational coefficients. It's always a direct sum of cyclotomic fields. Let's say C R, where C I is a cyclotomic field. So how we get these projections from this group ring to these cyclotomic fields? We just take any character. Just take any character sigma of this finite abelian group, so to C star, and we extend it to the homomorphism of group rings. It gives you a homomorphism from this group ring to C. And the image of this homomorphism is, of course, a cyclotomic field. Because the image of a character is always a cyclic group on the circle. So the image of sigma tilde is a cyclotomic field. So for each sigma tilde, for each sigma, you obtain a cyclotomic field, which is the image of sigma tilde. It's a cyclotomic field. And then you show that in this way you get many, enough projections into cyclotomic fields to get such an equality. So this thing is a direct sum of fields. So we just substituted this formula here. We obtain that this is equal to sum over I. And here we have group rings of a free abelian group with coefficient in a field. And this is, of course, Ki. It has no zero device. So this small argument shows that there is a canonical embedding of the group ring of H into a direct sum of fields. Now it is essentially clear what should we do. What should we do? So we have this embedding of the H into its classical ring of fractions, which is a direct sum of fields. So this is a direct sum of certain fields, Fi. Now for each I, we define a homomorphism, Phi I, just by composing this inclusion and projecting it into Fi. So we compose the inclusion with the projection. So in this way we get a homomorphism phi r, phi I from Z of H to FR. Alright. Now we define, look at the corresponding torsion, tau phi I XE, which lies in FI, well, which may be zero of course. And finally we define the total torsion of X corresponding to this order structure as a sum of all I's, tau phi I XE. Now this sum lies in the direct sum of these FI's. And the direct sum, as we know, is the classical ring of torsion. Alright. So I apply this torsion construction to each summon individually, and then I take the sum over all summons. And we arrive to an element of a certain ring, which in principle knows nothing about this decomposition, which can be defined in invariant terms. Alright, this is already the first step. Now, I sum up. For any Euler structure on X, we define the torsion tau of X E, which lies in the classical ring of fractions of the group ring of H. So H is H1 of X. Now, if instead of E I take another Euler structure, I recall that there is an action of H, in fact, the free transitive action of H on this set. So if I take an element H of H, then tau of X H E is equal to H tau X E. So in a sense, if you know this torsion for one Euler structure, you can recover it for all other Euler structures by this formula. Now this formula, this on the right hand side, we have just the product of two elements of this set. H lies in H, and H is of course a subset of this big ring. Alright. Well, this happens for all, for arbitrary CW complexes. Now, how to get a number out of it? To get a number, we need to pass to dimension 3. So, dimension 3 is specific. And we'll see why it is specific. Now, I want to apply this theory to X, which is a C-wave. So, for completeness, I will assume that this is closed. Closed means compact without boundary. Closed, well, say, oriented, streaming. So closed means compact and the boundaries endless.
Also, what should it be connected?
Connected. Closed, oriented, connected. Well, I don't have to assume that it is smooth or piecewise linear, because in dimension 3 they are all smooth and piecewise linear. So that's not a necessary assumption. So let me denote by H the homology group of M. And I assume that I need to assume that this is a big group. Namely, I assume that the first Betti number of M. This is the first Betti number, which by definition is the rank of this group, is at least 2. Which means that there are at least 2 factors of Z inside this group. Now, this is just for the aim of this talk. Actually, it is not necessary. So theorem, theorem says that for any order structure in M, this torsion tau n e actually lies in the group ring, is an element of the group ring. So a priori it lies in a much bigger ring, which is an extension of this ring. But in this case, for three-dimensional manifolds with the first Betti number at least 2, it lies just inside the group ring of H. Now, that's where we finally hit integer numbers. Because what does it mean? It means that it's a formal linear combination of elements of H of homology class with integer coefficients. But these coefficients are, of course, the numbers we want to have. All right. Now I'm ready to define numerical invariance of these order structures. Now we take this torsion, which is an element of the group ring, so we can expand it as a sum of a certain, well, let's say G and H and G, G. So element of a group of the group is a formal linear combination of elements of the group with integer coefficients. So NG. NG of course depends on this on the Euler structure. So each coefficient is just an integer. So these are the integers we want to study. Now I define the numerical invariant of E. T of E to be just n1 of E, which means the coefficient of the neutral element of H. Well, here there is a small difficulty that namely that the neutral element is denoted by 1, not by 0. That's because I use multiplicative notation for H, which is convenient when you deal with group rings. But in fact, this is, of course, just a zero homology class. All right. So what we've got, we have got a function, T, which I call torsion function. So T is a function from the set of order structures from M to U. Now, do we lose any information by taking only one coefficient? Well, of course not, because of that formula over there. So actually, when you know this coefficients for all E, you can recover the whole torsion. So there is no loss of information. So this function is an is equivalent version of the torsion. All right. Now I would like to talk about the Zeibach-Witten function. So Zeibach and Witten defined a function SW was a set of spin C structures on any four manifold to integers. Well, of course, when I say any, I mean W should be oriented. And here it is important to ask it to be smooth, closed, oriented, smooth four manifold. Well, there are some additional assumptions on Betti numbers, which I don't want to mention. So this is Zeidler-Witten invariant, which is defined by counting solutions to certain partial differential equations. But if I have time, I will speak more about it. Now, what can we do with three-manifold? Now, if you have a three-manifold, you can form a four-manifold by multiplying it by the circle. So, of course, if you have a spin-C structure on a three-manifold, you can multiply by the trivial spin-C structure on the circle. Or if you want, you can lift it to this product. So there is a map from spin-C structures on M, 3, 2, M is as before. So spin-C structures on M times circle. So here you can apply the Zeidler-Witten invariant, and you arrive to this. So you can take a composition of these maps, which this composition is called the three-dimensional Zeidler-Witten invariant. So Zeidler-Witten invariant in dimension 3. Now, the main theorem which relates these two approaches, theorem says that under our assumptions on M, I believe I have them somewhere here. So these are assumptions on M. Already, all right, theorem here. Theorem says that under these assumptions, so the main assumption is that the first Betti number is at least 2. These two functions are equal. So I recall you that the order, the set of order structures in this case, and the set of spin-C structures is just the same set. So these two functions are equal, at least up to psi. Well, this sign appears. In Zeidler-Witten theory, Zeidler-Witten invariant is obtained by counting solutions to certain equations with signs. And these signs are obtained by certain choices of orientations. Actually, one needs to make a very subtle comparison between various choices of orientations in both theories. So that's why there is a certain sign, which in principle may depend on the manifold. All right, now I very briefly recall the Zeidler-Witten equations. Well, one can write down this equation in dimension 4 and then apply this construction. But you can also write this equation directly in dimension 3. So that's what I'm going to do. Now, so I start with the 3-manifold. Well, as usual, closed. Oriented. Now I take a spin-C structure of M. Well, as we know, I think I'll explain it. The group spin-C3 is the same as U2. So a spin-C structure gives you a U2 bundle. E. The spin-C structure E gives a principal U2 bundle. Now, with this principal bundle, I want to associate two vector bundles. First of all, U2 acts on C2, well, in the usual way. And this action and this principle bundle allow me in fact, produce two-dimensional. So this produces C2, which is two-dimensional complex vector bundle S over N. Well, as usual, when you have a principal bundle, say principal G bundle, G any group, and then this group acts on a vector space, then you have a vector bundle. So this is a two-dimensional complex vector bundle. The next thing, that's the first remark. The second remark is that you have a determinant map. U2 also acts on C. Acts on C via determinant. Why is it determinant? So one gets a one-dimensional complex vector bundle, one-dimensional complex vector bundle, which I denote small c, small s over M. So the equation is going to be written in terms of these bundles. Now, alright, so equations are imposed on a pair, A, psi, where A is a connection on small s, on this one-dimensional bundle, and psi is a section of capital S, so the two-dimensional bundle. Now the equations are F A is equal to Q psi and dA of psi is 0. So these are Zagabitan equations in dimension 3. Well, now what does it mean very rapidly? FA is of course a curvature. FA is a curvature of A. Well, Q of psi is a certain quadratic form in psi, which is defined in terms of Clifford multiplication. So this is a quadratic form. On psi, defined in terms of Clifford multiplication. Now, why is the Clifford multiplication? Of course, it appears because it is spin group. Right? There is a sort of Clifford action this S. There is an action. There is a Clifford action of T star M on S. So in fact, it's a Clifford bundle. That's the point where one has to use that it is a spin group. So there is a Clifford multiplication in terms of this multiplication. Where I can write down an explicit formula. Maybe write down an explicit formula. So first of all, you choose an oriented frame. E1, E2, E3. It's a frame for T star M. So this is three-dimensional real vector bundle. You choose an oriented frame here. The Q of psi is a certain constant times sum over ij, 2i times a smash product ij. Well, this is the exterior product, which is reasonable, because we have to arrive to two forms. On the right, we have an exterior two forms. So we need to get an exterior two form here. And here there is certain C plus Clifford EI, comma C, Clifford EJ, psi. So psi is an S. EJ acts on psi, so this is again a vector. Clifford means that we consider this as a Clifford multiplication of EJ and psi. So this is an element of S. Now this happens in the dual. Psi plus is a Hermitian dual. So S has a Hermitian metric because it's spin 2 bundle. So we can consider Hermitian dual, and this is a dual action. So this is an element of the Hermitian dual. And the bracket means that we just evaluate one vector, covector on a vector. So that was the definition of psi, of Q. And now dA is the Dirac operator. dA is the Dirac operator, which is defined as follows. You start from C star of S. So these are C star sections of this bundle. Then we apply a covariant derivative defined by the by your connection A and the Levi-Civita connection on M. So you write to C star S tensor T star M. So this is the covariant derivative. Of course, I forgot to say, but L should be provided with the remaining metric. From the very beginning, M, one has to fix remaining metric from M. And now finally, you go along with the map induced by this Clifford multiplication. So there is a Clifford multiplication map which maps back to C star S. So this composition is dA, it's Dirac operator. So it acts on sections of S and transforms them into sections of S. Now the equation states that dA of psi should be zero. And the curvature of A should be computed from psi by this formula. So these are Seibel-Clifton equations. Well, now, as usual in this theory, there is a certain gauge group, which means there is a group which acts on solutions, premute solutions. Now, in this case, the group is relatively simple. I just mentioned the group without all the details. So, the gauge group. Is just a set of maps, well, C star maps from the manifold to the circle. Now you consider the set of solutions. Well, solutions of these equations are called monopoles. Solutions are called monopoles on M. Now what you have to do is to consider these solutions, monopoles, modulo the gauge group. So these are monopoles up to gauge transformations. Well, and roughly speaking, this is a manifold of formal dimension zero. So when one computes dimensions, this turns out to be a zero-dimensional manifold. Zero-dimensional manifold. Well, which means, as usual in this theory, that you need to perturb a little your equations, and then you get a zero-dimensional manifold, which is a compact and oriented. So, zero-dimensional compact, oriented manifold. Well, which means that this is just a finite set of points. Some points with signs plus, some points with signs minus. And then you count the total number of signs. So the number of plus points minus the number of minus points. And this is going to be the Zeigler-Witten invariant of E. So Zeigler-Witten invariant of E is this, the number of elements in this set, which should be understood in the proper way, which means that first you perturb to get a zero-dimensional manifold, and then you count points with signs. So that's an algebraic number of elements. This is the Zeigler-Witten invariant. The main problem, of course, in this theory, well, it's not a problem, but technical difficulty is to prove invariance under the choice of the Riemannian metric, because what we want is a topological invariant independent of the choice of the metric. And that's why the assumption on the first Betti number, so this is a bit true, so if the first Betti number is at least 2. If the first Betti number is 1, then it is not true. Then this number depends on certain choice. So that's why I don't want to speak about this. But if Betti number is at least 2, you get a well-defined numerical invariant of the spin C structure. And the theorem says that it is the same as this invariant defined via the torsions. All right. Now, maybe a few further remarks. For those who know floor cohomology. Now, in fact, behind these numbers, there is a certain homology theory. So let me. This situation is known in dimension 3 in the situation of so called Cassan invariant. I just recall for those. So Cassan invariant is a certain invariant of 3 manifolds. Just a numerical invariant. Behind this invariant, there is so-called floor homology of M. As a Cassan invariant is the order characteristic of this floor homology. So Cassan is the order characteristic of floor homology. So that's a well-known theory. Cassan invariant appeared quite a while ago. Well, soon after developed by Floor, and this was seen. Now, similar situation happens with this Zeigler-Witten invariant. So, Zeigler-Witten invariant. Except that now, this is invariant of a pair, a 3 manifold, and a spin C structure. Now the same happens here. Well, there are certain homology. They are called Zeigler-Witten floor homology. So that's a homology theory which depends on the choice of a spin C structure. So this Zeigler-Witten homology depends not only on M but also on the choice of it. So for each spin C structure, there is its own homology theory. There are as many homology theories as there are spin C structures on the moon. And there is the same relation as W of P is the Euler characteristic. Well, this is a graded homology theory as the Euler characteristic of this homology theory. Well, I just mentioned names of people who consider such theory. Well, in fact, there are many people. Well, it was this analogy was immediately clear for people who thought about it. For instance, you can find information about it in the works of Mark Pauly, my teacher Mark Pauly. She wrote a book which is called Zybek-Witten-Gage Theory, and she also published several papers together with Wang on the net. So you can find information about this theory and a proof of this equality. Well, there is a competing approach by Oswich and Szabo, who constructed another theory, so it's called, they call it flow homology, but it's not the same theory. Flow homology of ME, constructed by Oswich. And they proved that the oil characteristic of their theory is this torsion invariant. So this is a torsion invariant. Well, in fact, these two approaches are believed to be equivalent. So it is believed that these two flow homology theories are equivalent. But they are formulated in different terms. So here one uses monopoles, here one uses certain in the Gross style, and one uses holomorphic disks, and the ideas come from Gronow's theory. All right. So besides this numerical invariance, there are certain homology theories, well, which I don't discuss. So this is the end of this lecture. So next time I want to consider more particular questions, which should be of interest to topologists working in Calgary. Namely, questions relating these torsions to cohomology rings, linking forms, and such like invariants of three manifolds, which were studied in Calgary by your colleagues. Well, thank you.
So the main theorem you said, or one of the main theorems today, was that the torsion equaled plus or minus Zybek-Witten, and we needed the Betti number to be at least 2. Is it actually false? The Betti number is...
No, it is not false if the Betti number is 1, but it is more sort of difficult to calculate, to formulate, because both depend on some additional data, so it becomes more technical. And it's also true in the, for Betti number 0, but one should change definitions appropriately. So what is true is that instead of Zybek-Witten don't define the invariant for rational homology spheres, but some people did after them by some manipulations with the invariants. One need to add some more data. And so this gives you an analytically defined invariant, and the torsion part is ready, except that one needs to insert the Cousin invariant. So this is a properly formulated Zybek-Witten invariant is equal to the torsion plus
the custom.
Mm.
For rational homologous fields. So it's more interesting and more difficult. It is a result of Nicolaescu.
Can I ask an algebra question? Yeah, the classical ring of fractions of finitely generated abelian group, according to this, has no nilpotent elements. Is it possible to see this directly?
Well,
I mean, you proved this to direct some field.
That's right. Well, there is an enormous theory of group rings of say nilpotent groups, and also more general groups which can be ordered. So that's a very big theory, and possibly there are such results.
Well, if there's torsion, if it cannot be ordered.
No, I mean,
if there's a torsion part.
Abelian groups is a special class of.
Yeah.
They all can be ordered in some sense. And so there is a big theory of possibly it is known for this Lille class.
I look up Passman. It's a big book on
Passman. Yeah, I got.
Is there a monopole for a suggestion? Is there any physical?
Well, this comes from the Zadok-Witten theory, and which itself comes from physics. So, I presume there should be a physical explanation. All right. Thank you.